Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A small warning, on this episode of Park Date, we used AI to generate an artificially intelligent presenter going by the name Chris Beanland. Please note, this is not the real person, but an artificially intelligently generated person who is not the real person. Welcome to another park date. I'm here at Leeds City Park, except it's not Leeds in the UK, it's Leeds in the Utah. Yes, I've come all the way to the west side of America to record this introduction. That's not true. I was just here anyway, going to some national parks and stuff like that. And I found myself in Leeds, Utah, where there's a great pizza place called Mainly Pizza, and this great park where there's kind of some playground equipment, there's a stagecoach you can play on, and people playing football, or as Americans would say, soccer. So why not introduce this episode, Chris? Okay, I'll do it. Coming up now, we have David Ellis, who talked to me as we walked over Woodhouse Moor, aka Hyde Park in Leeds. David is a principal transport planner at Leeds City Council. He is a urbanist and historian as well. He's interested in cities, planning and transport. And we had a massive geek out session and it was fantastic. That's what you're going to hear now. We did it just before David interviewed me about my book Lido, and we've since got together to do another event at the Hyde Park Book Club where we talked about City Parks, which is my book about city parks related to this podcast. And we also did an event about my unbuilt book. David is my favourite person to do book talks with, and he is a great person. We actually first met when I was judging a Graham Coxon lookalike contest, which David won. So enjoy this episode, and as ever, if you like Park Date, please do subscribe and like. The socials are at Park Date Podcast, and mine is at Christopher Beanland. Do enjoy this episode. Welcome to Leeds. We're on Woodhouse Moor, or is it sometimes called Hyde Park? And I'm here with David Ellis. David, thank you for joining me today.
Great to be here, Chris. Yeah, that is a good...
What would you say?
It's a good question to start off
yeah,
with.
What would you say the name of this park is?
Subject of lengthy debate. I'm in the Woodhouse Moor crowd as like a traditionalist.
Yeah.
Following what it says on the map.
And you're from Leeds, so we have to listen to you.
I am from Leeds, but I'm a bit of a historian... being a bit technical, but I think to a lot of locals it's fair to say it is Hyde Park.
Yeah.
So both are acceptable.
And I remember in my student days everyone would say Hyde Park. And it's partly because you've got Hyde Park Corner, which is just over here.
Yeah.
With the Hyde Park pub and the Hyde Park Book Club, which is where we're doing a little event later, aren't we, after this podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. The former car garage that you remember it being.
Yes.
Which I think I've not actually met anyone who remembers this, not to
showing my age.
Shade to throw at the start of a podcast. It's not that long ago. I don't know. Clearly not met the right people, but yeah.
Yeah.
No longer a car garage.
And now a very, very cool bar, cafe space.
Yeah.
And you very, very kindly organised this event where I'm going to talk about my Lido book. And I don't think I told you this, but it's actually the first live talk I'll have ever given for that Lido book, because it came out in COVID and we had to cancel everything. So
such a shame. Yeah. Was it 2020 then that it actually launched?
It was 2020, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had to cancel all those events. So this will be a nice one to do in a great venue. But yeah, so we're going to walk through Hyde Park or Woodhouse Moor a little bit. And you live near here now, David.
I do now,
but
yeah.
You've lived in other parts of Leeds.
I have, yeah.
Been to other parks, I guess, when you were sort of growing up here, right?
Yeah. So I grew up in North Leeds. So I guess like in my immediate area of Leeds, it was pretty suburban and kind of one of the areas that doesn't really have many of its own near, sort of purpose-built parks. But we used to go to some of the bigger ones like Round A Park and Golden Acre Park, which I love just because the name is so cool.
I don't know that one. Well, I've been to Roundtable. I don't know.
Yeah,
Golden Acre. Like?
I love the history of it because it was like the name was a complete sort of invention by like a property developer in the 1930s they were trying to develop the area, and so they called it Golden Acre as a sort of, I don't know, evocative title. And that park was originally like almost like a mini theme park in the 1930s, and it had like rides and a big lake with kind of boats on the lake, and I think it had, you know, sort of not roller coasters, but kind of, you know, fairground type attractions. But it was all a bit of a commercial failure, and I think it closed just before the war and lay kind of semi-abandoned throughout the wartime. So I always found that history really fascinating. And then it was kind of saved from dereliction by the council, who sort of, I think they bought it and they kind of pared it back and turned it into a more conventional park without the attractions. So it's just like a lake now with some gardens and woodland.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely, really lovely space. It's not as accessible as Woodhouse Moor. It's kind of out beyond Addle on the Otley Road.
Yes.
But that was one I quite liked because I loved imagining kind of, it's kind of lost grandeur. Yeah.
So like a big kind of amusement, almost like a theme park or something.
Like one of those big 1930s, bit like what you're going to talk about later, a bit like in the leisure movement that gave rise to Lido's, people with more time, more money, going out to just be on the city to sort of have fun. And I may be wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had a sort of informal Lido there as well, but that's now as part of this lake, but that's now long gone.
Yeah, and the two things actually go together, don't they? Because when I was researching the Lido book, a lot of the Lidos that you found out about were in parks, and obviously the parks came generally before Lidos, more in the sort of Victorian era. But then when they were building Lidos, they thought, well, actually a park is a good place to put them. So a lot of them were in parks. In fact, was there one in around Hay?
There I'm was. Like, that yeah. was Leeds's. I
they
think,
had one there,
I think
they?
Leeds's only. I might be wrong again, but there was certainly one in Round A, like at the base of the dam of the big lake, and that was there till the late 80s. Really popular Lido. Pretty sure it was. Certainly it's sort of built in the interwar years. Hugely popular post-war. But yeah, then followed that trajectory where it sort of, I guess local authority cuts and slightly changing leisure habits meant that it was less popular into the 80s and shut, I think, 89 year after I was born, so I never experienced that one. And the site is still there, I think, mainly grassed over. Part of it is a car park, which seems to be the fate of all great urban amenities, that they get turned into car parks. But
Victoria Park Lido turns into a car park as well.
So it could, in theory, it could return. It's not, you know, it's not been built on. But no, Round Day, and now people swim. I guess they're not meant to, but I've heard there are people that swim in the lake in early morning away from watchful eyes. But just showing that there would be demand for a Lido there.
Yeah, I think there is, and we were talking about some of the other campaigns to bring Lido's back in Yorkshire to places like Hull and Oxenhope, Otley.
Yeah.
There's definitely an appetite for outdoor swimming, and people are trying to bring them back. Liverpool as well, there's a big big campaign. Do you think we can see more of them maybe coming back to cities in the future?
I'd like to think so, yeah. I really would. I think I guess it's just so hard because of the cost of urban land and the cost of just building them and maintaining them. But I think people's greater interest in sport and swimming throughout the year, things like triathlon and competitive swimming, seems to have grown. So I think there's a real all year demand for them, which maybe, you know, helps the old business case for building the Lido. But just that, I mean, we're going to hear later from people who are involved in these campaigns at the event, but I imagine that initial push to stick that money in to get it built, especially if the Lido was, the actual structure's been demolished, it's probably really hard. But I'd like to think we could see a lot more. I hope we do.
Well, and we need, say things like stakeholders, right? You need to get all the stakeholders involved, and the councils, I guess, are one of those things. And as a lead city council
officer,
exactly. Do you think you have to kind of persuade the councils in these places to kind of come on board, or is it something that you can do without?
I mean, I think I'd imagine most people who work in like the asset management sections of councils and leisure services sections would love the idea about dollars, because it, like, A, they're into that sort of thing by, you know, virtue of their jobs, but also it really complements and supports the sort of public health agenda of our time to get people out, get people active.
Yeah, get people healthy.
Supports the notion of, you know, people sort of community cohesion, bringing people together, which Lido's often did, from different kind of social backgrounds, different age groups. It's also really child friendly, and like Leeds is got a strong, it's like I'm doing a PR pitch here, but Leeds does have a mission to be a child friendly city and an age friendly city, so it really, it, you know, it ticks all, a lot of boxes in the jargon. But I guess it's that the challenge, as ever with local government, is just that initial capital funding. So I guess to do it, cities need to find a funding pot. They'll have to bid funding from somewhere and get creative with their applications. But like in principle,
David,
it's definitely something Leeds would support, sure.
Is your job like being in Parks and Recreation? is that like a documentary?
I'm going to have to disappoint you because I have not really thoroughly watched it, but I'm told...
You need to watch that show.
From kind of ranting about my, you know, talking to my people about my job, I'm given to believe it is, but I definitely need to watch that show. And I love the fact that, I mean... It's a complete tangent, this, but like, I love the fact that the Americans have created a comedy about people working in a branch of local government.
That would never
kind of made it cool and made it funny, and I almost can't imagine that happening in Britain. But I think we could do
like a British maybe we should write a British version of Parks and Recreation. We could set it in your planning department, because I think planning it is kind of under, local government things in general, people don't really understand. But planning especially is such a big, important thing. People don't really get it. So maybe we could tell that story, but with a sort of comedy.
It would be funny.
Do funny things happen in the planning office as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sort of specifically in, like, what's known as highways and transportation, like doing transport planning. We do have fun. I don't know whether we have as much fun as people in Parks and Rec, but it is. We definitely, there's a lot of passionate people who are really committed to what they do and have a good sense of humour. So maybe it could be the subject of a show. I guess we don't kind of like manage things in quite the same way as I guess a Parks and Rec department do. We're a bit more behind the scenes, sort of preparing plans and writing business cases and having meetings, so maybe a little bit less scope, but who knows. I'm not a director or a producer, so
I always thought something like that could really work well in, you know, if you said it in the 60s or something, when the planners really had the power.
Yeah, that would be good
to do everything right.
Should
we sit down over here
let's do it.
But the, you know, obviously when you think about Leeds, in that time, just like a lot of other,
I know,
a lot of other cities, they were really transforming the city, and the planners especially.
Yeah,
were really, you know, the idea of the Leeds motorway city of the 70s, yeah, when it was you know, that idea that we were going to build all the ring roads and stuff. They were really transforming the city,
and did
they?
In a lot of cases. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I think I've not seen it, but I'd like to. But there's a, I think there's like a recent kind of play about like Robert Moses and his battle with Jane Jacobs in New York, which was one of those plays that was like broadcast to cinemas, but I missed it. So there's already some kind of media on this. But yeah, I know Leeds was. It was. I mean, this was like actually what a lot of my PhD was on, so you sort of maybe speaking to the right person here. But yeah, Leeds was very, it was very ambitious, and it really had a very clear vision. And kind of looking back and kind of comparing it to today, it's amazing how much was built in such a short time frame. So like the kind of core bit of being a ring road, which is like a, you know, chunky piece of engineering, sort of urban motorway around the northern part of the city, was like essentially like the idea was first emerged in like the late 50s, and then like by the mid to late 60s they were building it, and like by the early 70s they'd finished like the first kind of northern arc. So like in sort of 15 years from just twinkling someone's eye to this huge and the, you know, huge project. So that is astonishing. I mean, and in a strange way, I'm, although that's like completely like diametrically opposed to what I'm about as someone who's into cycling and cycling infrastructure and walking, I am amazed at how much they got done. Yeah. Like, they really did get things done.
I think that's the, that's
in that
the,
era.
I think that's the thing as well. You look at it and you're kind of appalled by it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I see a certain beauty.
There
in
is
it.
A certain beauty. There's yeah.
And, you yeah. know, it was amazing that they could create these things.
Yeah.
And it was very, very go ahead, wasn't it? You know, building the flats and building the in the ring
absolutely.
Road, especially.
Because it was, as you say, it was all the commercial redevelopment and the public housing alongside it. And yeah, sometimes it is. There are bits of it that, that are quite aesthetically pleasing. Like my favourite bit of, it's almost like it's embarrassing to admit it when you're into civil transport, but the flyover in Halifax, and you know that one that kind of soars over the valley, like
it looks very cool,
Los Angeles style. Like again, like it's enabling the car, but it does look pretty good.
You can't
deny it, but. So yeah, there's, and I think you've got to, when you're looking back at history, you can't just be really negative. You've got to try and understand people and their motivations, and kind of not be too moralistic and like treat it.
I think that's
a product of its time.
I think that's a really interesting point, David. Mm. And you're so right, because in that era, Colin Buchanan's Traffic in Towns was kind of the Bible for everything. Everyone thought, well, we're going to have to, you know, cars are going to be this big problem.
Yeah.
We have to solve the problem by building roads.
Yeah,
just as now. You know, we kind of think we need to build cycle lanes. We need to have, sustainability.
Exactly.
You have these different things, which are products
you do.
At different times.
And maybe in 30, 40 years, someone will be sitting on a bench talking about the follies of all Leeds of cycle tracks, because maybe there'll be a new sort of zeitgeist then.
Exactly.
That'll
be like drones
over.
Or something, flying cars.
I know.
Well, why did they build all these cycle tracks?
But one interesting point, which I'd... When I finally get around to it, I'd love to write an article on this, but I never quite get around to it, is that, like, even though they built a lot of infrastructure in places like Leeds in that time, they actually still... It's kind of really paradoxical, but they wanted to control the car, and they didn't actually want everyone to drive everywhere. So they actually... They thought they were sort of... Well, their goal was to preserve a part of the city, kind of channel the car onto these purpose-built roads... But actually, they wanted most people to use the bus, so they kind of wanted the roads to be free-flowing with, like, a small number of cars.
Right.
Most people getting the bus and walking when they got to the city centre to sort of, in their view, kind of preserve sort of the rest of the urban fabric.
Yeah.
And whereas when we look at it now, we sort of tend to assume, oh, they didn't care about cities, they didn't care about public transport, they wanted to kind of completely tear them all up. That wasn't actually their goals, but obviously the way that infrastructure has been used is quite different, because the roads are heavily used and bus use declined, so it's like they did fail in that respect.
And I guess,
because it's
I guess they needed roads, because they had to have buses in Leeds, because it's kind of the biggest, I think it's the biggest city in Europe that doesn't have kind of rapid transit
another mode
been kind of all these ideas over the years, and recently they wanted to build a tram up Otley Road, which is where we're near now.
I guess that would have been a project when you were at uni.
And in fact, I think I'm right in saying that maybe all that run of shops by Hyde Park Book Club would have been knocked down, so we might have not had a venue for tonight.
I know, yeah. And it's amazing to think, isn't it?
Well, I got my hair cut at university for £3 at a time in a barber's that was on the corner, and I think that was...
In a condemned...
Scheduled for demolition for the tram, but that tram was never... never built, was it?
The super tram, is it in your... It's not in your book, Unbuilt. You'll have to do a new...
You'll have to do a new issue.
It needs to be a new
version,
appendix needs to be released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what made me laugh as well then, when they said that they weren't going to build the tram, they introduced those buses which looked like trams.
Oh, yeah.
But do you remember those ones?
I do, yeah.
They're kind of like a bus.
Bendy buses or articulated buses in the
XTRs
industry.
Or something weird.
Yeah. They lasted for, I think, about a decade. Yeah. And, but then they ended up getting scrapped, and we kind of went back to double deckers,
regular bus.
For some reason, we don't, because those sort of bendy buses are so common, like, on the continent, and they work really well. But for various reasons, we've never managed to make them work in Britain, which is a whole other podcast. I think you can
exactly.
Maybe not one many people would want to listen to, but
we'll do an episode of that.
We could do that.
I'd listen
when you
to
get
that.
To transport. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But these things are really, really important, really interesting.
Yeah,
and I mean, you see it in parks as well. I guess this is sort of a cycle lane coming through the park, isn't it? And
parks
have this space where people walk and people can bike as well. Parks are important as a kind of transport.
I do think they can be, because often that they allow you to, when there is like a designated route, they allow you to avoid the main road. You're sort of sharing the space with pedestrians, which can be problematic, but it can also work if the routes aren't really busy, and it can be really pleasant, like, especially when it's light. And often parks do connect communities in a way that's better than the main road, or sometimes there is no main road and a park kind of, it's on a hillside or something, actually is the only link.
You see those kind of linear parts
exactly,
don't you?
Like we've got the Meanwood Valley is like a set of green spaces in Leeds, and one of our cycle routes goes up there. Obviously the downside is they're not necessarily like safe at night if they're not lit, so they're not they're not maybe the absolute gold standard, but they can be really good, they can be really useful. There's another good one.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Beckett's Park, kind of, yeah. Which is just on the other side of Headingley. But yeah, great place to walk and and run. And yeah, like as I said about, it's great for efforts to improve public health and sort of sociability and community connections, the places where people come together.
Yeah, and I guess in your job, you kind of have to see like the big picture as well. You're kind of looking at you're looking at transport planning, how everything sort of works
definitely
together, right?
Yeah, we are, yeah. I mean, very much so. I mean, traditionally it was sort of highway engineering was in a bit of a silo, but it's become a lot more progressive in recent years and decades, and now it's much more interested in not just moving motor vehicles, but thinking about how we can improve people's quality of life, you know, address issues like loneliness, you know, put other public health problems, yeah, address community cohesion issues, like get people into their neighbourhoods. And it's not just about how you move people around, but thinking about the quality of place on streets and on roads. So seeing them as places where people actually dwell rather than just move through. And parks are so often on the edge of roads, and so that like interface between the park and the road is so important, and how you get in and out of the park. And and seeing parks as also places where people move through, not just places where people dwell. So like, yeah, we are much broader. I think, yeah, like that legacy of the past where I think people were a little bit more narrowly focused is hard to address, because like, you know, in the past most of our big roads were built for moving motor vehicles, and so but now, yeah, we are much more holistic. But yeah, we've got a legacy of bigger roads that were sort of that aren't always as good for walking and cycling, but we are making them more walkable, more cyclable, and it's amazing how possible that is, like to actually retrofit them. Yeah, that's what we're doing,
and actually
a lot of cities are doing.
Yeah, you can see that in a lot of cities, can't you? And well, talking about where we are now, you see the Otley Road basically comes right through.
Yeah,
Woodhouse Moor, Hyde Park. It's kind of like an old, very old road, isn't it?
Really
it out
is.
Of Leeds.
Yeah.
And it sort of cuts through. There's the main part of the park on this side, and then kind of a smaller part on
there
the other
is,
side.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, you kind of wonder if maybe you could sort of knit the two parts together,
exactly,
and get some more cycle space or
exactly
something.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the sort of ideas we're looking at, and how you improve the connections across. And another interesting thing we're doing is we're increasingly looking at whether like the opportunity to convert parts of really big roads into parkland, and we've actually done that in the city centre on Meadow Lane. So we took a really big dual carriageway that was kind of like a dual carriageway to nowhere, because it ended at an old traditional street at Leeds Bridge, and we've converted that to just a single carriageway road. And what was one of the carriageways and a huge car park, a lot of that has been converted to a new park, which is kind of linked to other parks as part of like an effort to make the south bank of the city like a more livable place. So
check that out.
And again, like talk before about how hard it is to fund things, you know, in local government, but one thing councils do own a lot of is highway space. And so if that highway space isn't needed for like motor vehicles anymore, that space we can use for things like parks, you know, Lidos in a perfect world.
We have a long, thin Lido.
Long
exactly. Inner ring road or something.
There are these, we're thinking about spaces differently,
What do you think about the idea of this Leeds High Line, David, that might go along the railway, one of the old railway viaducts in
it's
Holbeck?
It's a cool idea, yeah. I don't know... a tremendous amount about it, but I've been to the like New York High Line, and that's amazing. And I've seen
so
other,
popular,
it's unbelievably
so
popular. And I've seen, I've certainly read about other examples of that in other areas, kind of like parks that bridge roads. Like there's one of those in like Mile End, isn't there? Something a bit like that,
exactly.
Shorter one. So great idea, and that would in theory like link parts of Holbeck in South Leeds out to Elland Road. Great idea.
As a Bradford fan, why would you want to go to Elland Road?
Fine, yeah.
I think that should be cancelled now.
Well, I'm a non. You're welcome to troll me on that, because I'm as everyone who knows me knows, I don't know anything about football. So although I'm virtually a lifelong Leeds resident, I don't have a horse in that race to mix metaphors.
Well, that's full. We can be friends then.
Yeah, exactly. For the purpose of this podcast, I support Bradford, so that's fine.
Increasing connection as well.
It's a good idea. I think it's just about whether that's needed for railway infrastructure or not, but it's a great idea. In that southern part of the city centre, there are actually a lot of plans to create new green space. There are two new sort of parks that have already been created, which is really, really, really good that are all kind of linked. Great to see them, especially when they're, you know, redundant car parks or underused car parks being converted to parks. That's, I think, a great way to make a city whole again.
Yeah, you see those kind of pocket parks as well in London, and I've seen them in America where it's just, you know, maybe the residents will come along and help with things. So you're almost creating a kind of neighbourhood.
You are,
where maybe there wouldn't be one otherwise. So that can work quite nicely, can't it?
It can. And there's a big tradition in Leeds, I guess, like a lot of cities, of like friends groups that have groups of local people who like support the maintenance of the park. Like, they're not the main maintenance, but they do bits of extra maintenance, so they help bid for funding, and they're kind of like the guardians of the park. And most parks have a friends of Roundhead Park, friends of I think Cross Flats Park and Beeston's definitely got one. But yeah, those really little pocket parks, again, yeah, they do bring people together, because they're kind of what they're what the community makes of them, really. We've got a few park luts, as they're sometimes called in Leeds. There's one on the Calls where just a single parking space has been removed, and there's some planters and some seating. And even that tiny, what is it, like 2.5 by 6 metre space is like, does bring people together. And you kind of, the people who maintain it get to know each other, and then that helps to make a bit of a community. You live in Hackney, don't you? And places like London Fields and Victoria Park, they've been through long, I guess they've been renovated a lot recently, and there must have been a lot of community input into that. So similar sort of thing.
I think so. And you can see those parks. So much work's been done on them, and they've really been renewed. And we talked about America a lot before.
Yes.
We're both fans of America. When I was in New York recently, so many of the parks in New York have been unbelievably well refurbished. Like Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
Oh, that's amazing.
They've replanted, you know, everything, and they've restored the buildings and the fences. It's beautiful. They've really done, you know, they've spent the money and they've made look very, very good. And I think for a long time, parks were a bit problematic, weren't they?
They
sucked a lot of money out of
funding,
and they were kind of looking shabby. People were scared to go.
Yeah, they were seen as places where bad things took place, and people were scared of them. They were like a maintenance liability. And,
Let's walk again. Because I remember when I was a student here at the end of the 90s, people didn't necessarily want to come into this park
at
night
time. The dark ages of parks.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, they would say to you, don't walk across this park at night.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's still the same.
I think that's still potentially said for some routes, but but I know a lot of people still do. Whether that's wise or not, I don't know. I'm mainly on my bike. So.
You're on your bike.
Yeah,
aren't you?
I
remember some drunken times trying to find Akbar's,
which is
the famous curry restaurant. I'm not sure if it's still open in this park.
Was it in that like old pavilion?
The old pavilion, exactly.
There is a curry place, I think, but I don't know whether it's called Akbar's. You could definitely get lost if you were trying to find it at night.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another interesting debate. I think there have been debates in this park about whether to light all the routes through it.
Right.
And some people have been against that because they want to maintain a more natural aesthetic. Other people have said, but it would make it safer. But then there's a debate about whether having lighting actually makes it safer, because I guess you might be in the middle of a lit route, but then you've got big pools of darkness on the side. So does that actually make it safer? So, I'm not really sure, but I don't know. I, I, because I didn't live in this part of Leeds, but I think certainly in the daytime, I would say this park has a decent reputation, and I'd say most people would feel really safe in the daytime.
Yeah.
At night, maybe not. But, you know, there's not, can't be that many inner city parks that people would feel safe in at night. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe London Fields is now just 24-hour
yeah,
open zone.
24-hour parties.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, I mean, obviously, you want people to be safe.
Definitely.
And you want to have that safety feel. But then there is something about, I don't know if you remember when you were a teenager, David, but we would go to places like parks specifically at night because you were not bothered and people didn't go there, so you could listen to loud music
for a sense of quiet.
Drink beers when you're underage and get up to all sorts of
that is interesting
silliness like that. Yeah,
that sort of makes me think about, like, we talked about transport planning earlier, but the other interesting thing about cities is all the unplanned uses, and I've read it, you know, spent a lot of time reading about this stuff, like, I don't know, we've come across the movements in the 70s and onwards that were kind of against planning. There was kind of like the non-planning movement, and they were always trying to emphasise that, like, you can't plan for everything, and sometimes the way people use spaces in unplanned ways is just as valuable, just as productive.
Yeah.
They might not have been talking about teenagers drinking in parks, but, you know, that is an interesting example. And, like, there's only so far you can plan for everything. And, maybe we should be more open, less judgmental about those informal, unplanned uses of all these spaces. Like, I guess with the caveat that no one's getting hurt. But, like, at various times in history, people might have frowned upon teenagers playing music in a park, but I don't know if people aren't getting. It's an interesting debate, isn't it? Like, is that?
That's really, yeah, it's really, really interesting, David. And, well, coming into view now is the skate park.
Yeah, interesting.
And I think, you know, skating sort of comes into that as well, doesn't it?
Because it does. Yeah,
that's one of those things that you know, people just go and do in brutalist buildings or in parks or in car parks or whatever. And then we kind of say, well, okay, here's a skate park for you.
Exactly,
or something.
But
people like skaters just go and
really
skate wherever.
They do, yeah. I mean, that's skating, yeah, that could be, I'm sure it has been a subject of all sorts of, like, urban podcasts, but, like, I guess skaters, like, yeah, they do like to skate in unplanned places, but they also seem to like planned skate parks as well.
This is a really popular one.
Yeah. So, like,
lots of people skating over there.
But the fascinating thing is they never just confine themselves to the planned skate parks, and there's always a bit of a cat and mouse game, isn't there, between skaters and the authorities sometimes. But it's interesting that they do like the planned places. It's not like a, you know, that is super popular, like, all year, that skate park.
It is, isn't it?
I don't really know much about skating, but I'm fascinated by the way skaters find interesting parts of cities to skate in, like a whole different way of looking at a city.
Exactly, and I think it's that kind of interaction with it, isn't it? Like, they're using the benches and the stairs and the ramps and things. They're kind of interacting with the city, like how people who do parkour and things like that
kind of
do as well, which I think is another sort of fascinating...
Really is, yeah.
Yeah, way of... kind of like...
This is where, the local government officer in me thinks is thinking about, the maintenance liabilities of that, and it's like, it's really difficult, but at the same time, it is fascinating how skaters use benches in ways they're not intended for.
Well, and as well, David, do you think, like, all the things that you've studied in your job, do you see the city in a different way to how everyone else does? Do you kind of think of, like... how things are laid out, and when you go to other cities, do you think, oh, these people are doing it well or these people are doing it badly?
Yeah, you can't help but do that. Yeah, when you've spent so long poring over plans and designs, it definitely changes the way, particularly the way I look at streets and, like, road layouts and even, you know, even things like traffic signs and, like, the road markings. Like, I've spent so long, like, debating them, like, that... Yeah, when you go, I mean, it makes everything more interesting because there's so much more. You look at the detail and you understand it more, and you can think about how it could have been differently, or you can
done differently. You can try and work out why it's been done like that. Sometimes it's like a puzzle. And then, as you say, sometimes you can critique it and say, oh, no, that's...
Yeah.
We wouldn't have done it like that, or that's a really good example. So, like, yeah, when I'm... Generally, when I'm in London, I'm, you know, in awe of a lot of the new cycle infrastructure there, and
yeah,
a lot of the, you know, the park landscaping is just so fantastic.
Yeah.
But we're bringing a lot of that to Leeds now as well. But,
yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it does, definitely does. I think you just notice a lot more, like a lot more detail. You can't not see it once you've kind of worked on it.
Even I think things like that. When we were talking about the ring road earlier, there's a junction on the Leeds ring road where you kind of, if you want to pull off, you have to pull off in the fast lane. You know what I mean?
Oh, and to the right on the kind of far
pull,
side.
You pull off the motorway to the to the side, which doesn't really seem to make much sense. And you think, why the hell did they do that?
That was,
and it's very dangerous.
It was
weird.
Like the Leeds highway engineers having an American kind of turn.
Yeah.
Because I think I've not driven much in America, but I think that is something they do in American freeways. You can have off ramps on both sides.
Both sides.
And I think I should know the history of this, but presumably, like, that was allowed at that point, but it's no longer something that that road designers would do.
Yeah.
And it is a bit unusual.
It comes the other way as well. There are some roads. Well, I obviously we did. I mean, David did a talk where I was talking about the unbuilt book in Leeds a few months ago, and a lot of motorways are kind of unfinished.
Yeah.
More than you would realise, and there are some motorways where you kind of join again into the fast lane, and whenever you do that, there's one in London on the east crossroad in Bow.
Is there? Wow.
When you're driving that, it's not much fun.
No.
When you suddenly arrive at a motorway in the fast lane,
and you just
think, well, why is
what
this
is going on?
What's going on?
We've got that bridge, you probably know, just beyond the universities, that was part of a slip road that never got finished. It's now a car park near the old broadcasting place.
Indeed, and that would
kind of fascinating.
And that would have been the motorway which would have come walking past over there.
That would have podcasting.
That would have come down here, wouldn't it? That would have been the Headingley Expressway.
Oh, yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. That's also in my PhD, if anyone's interested.
I will be requesting a copy of that, definitely.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that had so many iterations, but at its most ambitious, it was an expressway from the city centre to at least, like, Headingley Arndale, with, like, big junctions with, like, slip roads and grade separation and a bypass of the centre of Headingley. So, yeah, you can't say they didn't think big in that era. And, that was bitterly resisted from... They kind of wanted to do it or something like that from the 1920s all the way to the 1980s. And it was resisted by community groups successfully. It would have made where we are right now very different. These buildings would not be here.
Exactly. It would have been,
might not be cycling, you know, on an expressway.
On the expressway.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of big thinking, and maybe it's time to think big again, David. Like, in a different way, obviously not by building highways and things, but maybe now we need to think big in terms of building more cycle lanes and building all kinds of other things like that, right?
Totally agree. I mean, that's like my point I made earlier, that, like, I am kind of in awe of the ambition of the earlier era, and, like, it'd be great to move at pace, particularly with the challenges of climate change and public health challenges we face. Like, we do need to kind of get going with cycle and walking and public transport provision. So, yeah, trying to take a leaf out of their book in terms of ambition and, like, the pace of change would be good for cities. But I think that maybe the positive change that's happened since is that we do a lot more consultation now. Things are much more democratic,
right?
Which obviously slows things down.
Top down, like it
was before. Exactly. It was beginning. Like, my PhD is kind of all about how it began to become more democratic because communities oppose these sorts of changes. But we've learned lessons from that era. But the flip side is it is slower because obviously, you know, democracy takes time. So we're probably never going to be as fast as they were, like, in the 50s and 60s. But maybe we could be, you know, we can aim to be a bit faster when, yeah,
with all these goals you've got.
Definitely. Yeah. Less like, you're not going to be the Robert Moses of Leeds.
No, I wouldn't. No, God, no. Yeah, no. That's it, yeah. There were some real megalomaniac kind of figures in that era. Maybe less so in Britain. I think it was a bit more... I think the rule of law was probably a bit more dominant here. But yeah, no. It's going to be more like collaborative and sort of just discursive and deliberative than the Moses era. Definitely. I hope. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing what happens. I'll have to come back to Leeds again and I'll see what projects you've been working on,
exactly.
David.
Exactly.
How you're redesigning.
And maybe you'll be able to visit some new Yorkshire Lidos as well.
Absolutely.
Maybe Leeds will be full of Lidos by then. Yeah. You never know.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Open some more of them. Well, yeah. we're back at Hyde Park Book Club now, so...
Yeah.
We'll go and let's go and do the event,
yeah,
shall we?
Talk, yeah.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast anyway, David.
Enjoyed talking to you. Yeah, I look forward to hearing it online.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Cheers, David.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad. Make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews and leave them wherever you get your podcasts from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk, and if you see me walking around in a park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Coming up on the next episode of Park Date, I'm selling me piano, aren't I? The old piano. Come and buy it for £1 on the next episode of Park Date.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.